Welcome to Lessons in Leadership. I'm Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. We are thrilled to be joined by our good friend, Kim Guadagno, who's the former lieutenant governor of the great state of New Jersey and also president and CEO of a really important not-for-profit, Mercy Center. The website will be up. Kim, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Steve, always.
You got the websites up. Tell everyone what Mercy Center is. It's more important now than ever.
Well, you know, it's a really simple thing. We're just trying to end generational poverty, not some little small project. So it's in the greater Asbury Park area. We feed people in 24 different cities in Monmouth County, 6 different counties in the state of New Jersey. We feed them, we get their trust, and then we help them live a full life, whatever that is. We speak English, Spanish, Creole, and Arabic. And then we get the kids out of the worst academic system in the state of New Jersey in Asbury Park by giving them a great education, girls, a great education for 4th to 8th grade, get them into good high schools, get them on to college. So it ends the generational cycle of it all.
Incredibly important. Again, go on the website to find out more. And to our good friend, Larry Downs, who is the chairman of the board at Mercy Center. Larry and I have had these conversations about Mercy Center for years, and also your leadership. And to that end, you've been a leader in corporate America as a lawyer. You've been a leader in government as well, a variety of capacities, including lieutenant governor, and now the leader of this nonprofit. From your perspective, Kim, is there any significant difference, and if so, what is it, between leading in those different arenas?
It's night and day. You cannot just hop from being the lieutenant governor, where you're policy-driven, you're a leader, you walk in the room like you know everything, even if you don't, especially if you were the lieutenant governor to Chris Christie. So that's politics. You have to exude fearlessness, if you will, even if you are, you know, not sure about what you're about to say. But on the nonprofit side, completely different. It's mission-driven. People have a vision of what they want to do and where they want to go. They want to make sure that you go with them and that you're as committed as they are. You walk in and you do a lot of listening, a lot of looking people straight in the eye. And you're not, and I find it's often the case, the smartest person in the room. And so you do a lot of trust building. If you leave, I like to say I did 8 years in hell, and now I'm trying to earn my way back into heaven. But you have to earn people's trust as a completely rehabilitated politician. You have to earn their trust again. And you do that by just simply working hard and look them straight in the eye and listening.
And in addition to that, as Mary jumps in, as a not-for-profit leader, Kim and I and all of us who are leaders of not-for-profit organizations know that no money, no mission, we raise at least half of our, you roll your eyes, you know, at least half of our time raising money.
I like to say, Mary, you know this already. My husband, you know, never used to be able to go with me to any political events because he was a judge. He now gets to go to events with me. However, when the time for begging starts, I literally walk over to him, tap him on the shoulder, and I said, the begging is about to begin. You might want to leave.
And I love it.
Inevitably, he gets up and leaves because it's horrifying to him. But it's the job, right?
It is.
It really is.
It is.
Well worth every effort. I'm not asking for money for myself. You don't ask for money for yourself. And it's, you know, if I get to keep somebody off the street at night because they don't have a home, I'm good with that.
Well said. Mary.
I'm 100% confident that you have earned your way back into heaven officially. So keep doing the good work over there. Part of earning your way back into heaven, in my opinion, has to do with partnerships, right? Everything that you're doing cannot happen without donors, without volunteers. Talk about the keys, from your opinion, obviously, is it the same? Is it different? The keys to building partnerships, you talked a little bit about trust, but what is another key to building these strong partnerships that get people to buy into the mission of Mercy Center?
Well, and we have a lot of different partners on every level, whether it's a volunteer. Sure. I'll give you one simple. We were doing Christmas gift distributions last year, and then we found somebody here in Asbury Park who did it much better, much smarter, much less abuse of the system. And so now they're using our new building and they're doing all the gift giving. And what does that do? It makes us stronger all the way around. Did it happen overnight? No, you had to reach out to people. You had to accept that you can't be everything to everyone, and you don't want to be, that you have a limited, I don't want to say limited, but you don't have unlimited resources, and you can't do it all by yourself. So when it comes to volunteers and getting stuff done, you just have to know what your limitations are. Like, I try very hard not to duplicate somebody else's efforts in our area. But when it comes to donors is care and feeding. You spend a lot of time with donors, a lot of time talking to donors, a lot of time thanking them for all of their gifts, whether it's their gift of time or gift of treasure. Either way, it's a very different conversation. I don't go out to dinner a lot, but as I would as a politician, but I certainly go out to coffee, have a lot of coffee, have a lot of tours, have a lot of... You know what? I try to tell a story that will make them cry so that they feel, my donors feel like they're a part of it. And if I don't make them cry, then I'm not doing my job. And quite frankly, there is something to cry about every day here where we work. There is one more sad story than another. So my goal is to engage them that way.
And along those lines, this is part of our series, Making a Difference, not-for-profit leaders, not-for-profit organizations making a difference, that our good friend Larry Downs helps support. He's been supporting that initiative for years. But along those lines, I'm curious, and we've talked about this before, the Sisters Academy. What is Sisters Academy, and how is it connected to making a difference, Kim?
Well, it's the circle. The Sisters Academy is a school for 4th to 8th grade girls. What many people don't know is that in Asbury Park is the worst school system in the state. I'll say that again. Asbury Park is the worst school system in the state. Objectively, New Jersey DOE numbers show worse than Camden, worse than Trenton, worse than Patterson. You name it, we are the worst. It's nothing.
The Department of Education says that?
Yeah. Worst math and science scores for the 3rd to 8th graders. So if you go to the public school system in Asbury Park, you will not be able to get into a decent high school or a decent college, which means you will get back on my line at the pantry here in Asbury Park. And that is not the goal. The goal is to end that line by getting you a great education and getting you that out of this school system while they try to fix it. Look, I don't want to get into the politics of why it is the way it is, but while they're trying to fix it, we take girls out of the system, get them educated enough so they can get into good high schools, and from there go on to great colleges or some kind of advanced degree so they can support themselves and have a full life.
Good stuff. Last question, Mary.
For people that are watching, Kim, you have moved me. So many people want to help, myself included, but don't know how to help. How can someone that's watching right now get involved and help to end this cycle that you're talking about?
Well, it's pretty easy. If you don't have my cell phone number, it's the same one I've had for 15 years. You just call me. Or you find someplace local, because you are a statewide organization. We are based in Asbury Park, and we serve all of Monmouth County. And in sexual assault and DV cases, we serve 6 counties. But go to your local pantries. You can find them very easily. Just type into AI and go. Give your time, give your treasure. We just opened a warming center, so we are a shelter for families that are homeless overnight. And we found it, you know, surprisingly easy to find some volunteers to come and help people with comfort and warmth overnight. So there is always somebody who needs help, and there's always somebody you can go to help them, if that makes any sense.
Kim Gudano, former lieutenant governor, but now, as she continues to work her way into heaven, as she said, the president and chief executive officer of a terrific organization. I've had the honor of being down there and just watching a little bit of the work that goes on at Mercy Center. Kim, our good friend, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Thanks for raising awareness. It's great.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
We're joined once again by our good friend Joe Griffies, Director of Veterans Affairs, the Welcome Home Radio Show. Good to see you, Joe.
Good to see you guys. Happy holidays.
Yeah, we're taping this right before Thanksgiving. A lot to be thankful for, particularly as we honor our veterans and everything they've done for us in this great country. Joe, pick it up. Tell everyone what the radio show is all about.
Well, the radio show is about helping veterans, helping their families, and even helping relatives of veterans. 20 million veterans live in our country. Believe it or not, a little state like New Jersey has 280,000 veterans living in it. And a veteran has every problem that you can imagine, from homes being foreclosed, cars being towed away, needing health care, waiting in line to get doctor's appointments. So we're kind of there to, as a filter for veterans to go through. Steve, not bragging or nothing. I'm not really great at what I do. I'm just very lucky all the time. But 15 years ago, it would take them 15 weeks to call me back. Now it takes them 15 seconds whoever I call, because they know we won't take no when it comes to an answer for a veteran. That's all.
Awesome. Pretty simple. Mary, jump in. Let's talk about.
Yeah, and Joe, and I know my dad is watching right now. So thank you, Joe, for your service. Thank you, Dad, for your service as well, and all the other veterans out there. Talk about some of those needs, Joe. You and I talked offline really about what organizations are doing. You have all the veterans groups, Braven Health. We talked about that as well, because there are so many issues that our veterans need. Talk a little bit about what support these organizations have really helped to make a difference in the lives of our veterans.
Well, I'd like to get one thing perfectly clear. Mary, I don't have to help you, and I don't have to help Steve, and you don't have to help me. But together, we form a tribe. We form a village. There's so many people out there that need our help. We can only put a dent into mental health, homelessness, not only feeding our veterans, but feeding our children now in our country. Nobody can do it alone. I don't care who you are. But as a team, as a tribe, as a village, we can put a dent into it. Will we solve them all? No, but we can get the going in a decline position instead of suicides rising, homeless rising. Put a dent into it. Let's start lowering them numbers. Braven,
tied to our partners at Horizon, who have been not only great supporters of those of us on this series, but also the work that you and your colleagues are doing to support veterans. Go ahead, pick it up.
If you don't mind me bragging about my shirt that I'm wearing that Braven.
Oh, that was very strategic, Joe.
Very. I'm fortunate enough. Look, I'm just a guy that barely made it through high school. When I saw 70s on my report cards, I thought there were hundreds because I had so many. But they said I wasn't smart enough to go to college, but I'm smart enough to go to college. And here I am, a Vietnam veteran, and I sit on Horizon Braven Healthcare's Board of Directors. And that's pretty cool. So a lot of the insults, the don't wear your uniform home, you get beat up at the airport, spit on, colleges posting signs. We know you had the GI Bill, but if you're a Vietnam veteran, you're not welcome here. Our jobs not being given back to our veterans. And even veterans having trouble being supported by their family and their friends. I always say the biggest curse, the biggest problems that Vietnam veterans have and had when they came home was they had nobody to talk to. So what you, Steve, what you and Mary do every day, you're going to be able to tell our story 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when we're not around, when none of any of us are around, you're going to be able to tell the true stories, Mary, of your dad, of me, and of other veterans, it's not going to be told by a history professor that was in Vietnam that's trying to gather all information to make the right decision about what a Vietnam veteran wore, what he ate, what he thought about when he was in Vietnam, what he did when he came home. When guys like me sit down and do these interviews, we're telling you right from the heart. And you're going to carry that on. You're our legacy. You're the Vietnam veterans' legacy with the shows you do and the message that you carry on.
By the way, I appreciate that, Joe. Also, check out our steveadubato.org website, Honoring Our Veterans, our long-term series. It's not a one-off. It's a commitment to honoring our veterans, to examining the challenges they face, to providing whatever support we can. And again, not possible without support, without the support of great organizations like Horizon, the Horizon Foundation. Mary, last question for Joe.
Absolutely, Joe. And you talked about the generations ahead of us. Talk to our young adults. I have a 20-year-old, a 24-year-old, and I feel so blessed that my dad can share those stories. I have a photo of my now 23-year-old wearing my dad's Army uniform when he was 14. That's when it fit him perfectly. He wouldn't fit in it now. He's 6'2". But talk about really just keeping this alive for those young adults and for those 20-somethings that it just seems like that was something that happened so long ago.
It's not so important that people pat us on the back or give us a free meal on Veterans Day or Memorial Day. The important thing is to ask us questions, find out how we're doing, find out what we need. Because I don't know if it was Abraham Lincoln or Ben Franklin or one of them said, you'll judge your next generation of veterans supporting freedom for your country by how you took care of the present and the past. Right. Of veterans. We have to do a much better job. I'm glad to hear you say that your son sat down with your dad, because your son can't go to the library and get that information, what he can get from your dad. There are organizations out there like the 10, 20, 30 program where court stenographers, you will sit down with them. Religious churches have it. You sit down and you submit 10 pictures, maybe a 20-minute diary, letters, start of a book, and then a 30-minute conversation. And they bundle that whole program together, asking veterans questions, where they were, what they did, how they were treated when they came home. And then they bundle it. They send it to the Library of Congress for future generations to study. Now, they've done it, started with World War II, Korea, and Vietnam now. So future generations, professors that are going to be teaching colleges, students that are going to be learning, can turn around and find what really closest to the truth is.
Right.
About the war.
Hey, Joe, cannot thank you enough. Joe Griffey's Director of Veterans Affairs, the Welcome Home Radio Show. The website will be up. Check out all the different radio stations they are on. Again, to our friend John Pearson, the folks at Horizon, cannot thank you enough for your long-standing support. Uli Diaz, as so many others at Horizon who are committed not just to what we're doing in broadcasting, but using this vehicle, using this platform, using this tool to talk to people like Joe, to honor our veterans, to talk about what they need. It's not a one-off. It's a commitment, a long-standing commitment. Thank you, Joe. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Steve.
You got to stay with us. Mary and I will be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato, Mary Gamba. Mary, it's time for another Lessons in Leadership mini video seminar that people can take. And by the way, where can people find these on our website?
At stand-deliver.com. And Sylvester will put up the great little QR code so you can zap it if you're watching. Just grab it on your phone. And there's a whole library of past mini seminars up on our website.
And this Lessons in Leadership mini seminar, sound like I'm selling a car or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But leadership and negotiation, Mary?
Sure.
Okay.
I like it.
First of all, we negotiate all the time. First bullet point you'll see up, we negotiate all the time. Mary, why are we negotiating if I'm the leader and I'm the head of the organization? Why am I negotiating with you with Jackie Heyer, Jackie Chicarico, all of our other producers, all of our team members. Why am I negotiating? Why can't I just tell people what to do? Because I'm the boss.
Well, then you would just be telling people what to do because you're the boss. And if you do that, you're not going to get the buy-in from your team. And let's also say that negotiating doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to take what we say and run with it, but you're at least going to listen. You're going to really balance it in with what you thought the direction is that you want to go. And at the end of the day, as the boss, as you put it, you will get to decide if that is the direction we're going to go in or somewhere in between.
So the second bullet should be this: listen, dot, 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 really listen. Let me play that out. Mary will jump in. So some people think that listening is something where you learn to look like you're listening. You have your hand like this, or
you nod.
You're very pensive. Meanwhile, you're just waiting in negotiation for the next thing you want to say to talk about the next thing you want and need. It's much harder to actually suspend judgment, try to forget about what you want or think you need, and actually listen to what the other person's saying, Mary, and trying to understand it. What the heck does that have to do with successful negotiation?
It is human nature. People want to be heard. So if I'm talking to you, Steve, and then you mirror back or echo back or paraphrase what it is that I'm saying, I'm like, wow, he really heard me. And I'll tell you, if you really want to have success in almost anything in life, if you listen to that other person, it will definitely help you get to your end result. And it may not always be exactly what you wanted, but if you listen, you're open-minded to others' points of view, it will definitely help you in the long run.
So let's add that third bullet point. Paraphrase what you think you've heard. Why is that important?
It's so important. We often say message sent is not equal message received. So in this situation, if I, you know, hear you say something, I can then just paraphrase it back and say, Steve, what I believe you said is, or you can also use it as a curiosity. Steve, you know, tell me a little bit more about what you just said. I didn't realize that you were really into sports, right? So you can paraphrase something that somebody said to dig a little bit deeper, and it makes them feel really good.
Hey, but I can also do this, Mary, to paraphrase. So, Mary, I want to understand this. So what you're saying, if we do X, Y, Z, what makes you think the outcome is going to be A, B, C? Now, I can also use this paraphrasing as a way to watch this transition. April, watch this, our makeup artist. Hold up a mirror. I don't look at it 24/7, but it's always here. Mary, why would I use paraphrasing to, quote, hold up a mirror for you if we're negotiating? Why am I trying to get you to see what I see and hear, and what the heck does that have to do with negotiating?
Everything, because you want to, again, it goes back to being heard. You want to make sure that what you are communicating and frankly what you're receiving back is clear and understood in the same way as either you intended it or the person intended it.
But so to me, there's more than that.
Oh.
I'm also, Mary, holding up that mirror to say, Mary, this is the meta, M-E-T-A communication, meaning the communication that's obviously not being said out loud. Mary, just so I'm paraphrasing. I'm not being condescending, but I want to ask this. Are you saying, Mary, that if we do what you just said, we'll achieve X, Y, Z? Help me understand how we get there. Meaning what I'm really thinking is, Mary, I think that's not a very good idea, but I don't want to simply say to you, Mary, that idea is horrible. Because if I immediately say, Mary, terrible idea, which I've done before, and you've done that with me, what happens to the negotiating?
The negotiating is over and the person shuts down and case closed.
All right. Next bullet point. How about this one? This is easier said than done. Folks in Washington, government shut down every other week. Check this one out. Depersonalize the situation, Mary. How the heck in negotiating, and by the way, I went through a divorce many years ago through mediation and then in the courts. You know how hard it is to depersonalize a negotiation? Divorce is one thing. And by the way, there are all kinds of divorces, marital divorces, professional divorces. Mary, depersonalize the negotiating?
Mm-hmm.
How?
It is
Is it
the, I think
personal?
that is the hardest thing to do when negotiating. We all go into a negotiation with our own baggage, with our own perception, with our own bias. So until you could actually depersonalize and not go in and think it's about me, it's something personal. If you say to me, you know, Mary, you know, that was really a good attempt, but, you know, let's start from the beginning. I'm really not happy about that. I need to take it not as a personal attack to me or that I'm not good enough or I'm less than. I need to take it as, okay, I'm still really good at what I do, but maybe what I did was not exactly what Steve had in mind.
Okay, next bullet. When negotiating, dot, 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 be flexible. Hold on, Mary. I'm going into the negotiation. I know what, as an organization, we want and need. That's what I've got to get. Anything, I keep banging the desk, I hurt my hand. So every time I say what I want or what we need, but I'm not flexible, but you have a totally different agenda, but I'm telling you just what I need, and that's what I'm going in with, that's what I'm going out with, and anything less than that is a loss. What's the problem with that approach when you're negotiating?
Yeah, you can't be rigid. It's like a tree in the wind. If the top of the tree isn't blowing and gently swaying, it's going to crack, it's going to break. And the same thing happens in a negotiation. You don't want to break ties. You don't want to shut that person down. And again, it goes back to listening and just leaning in. If you are too rigid and not flexible, you're going to miss opportunities as well.
Last bullet point. When negotiating, redefine, and I'll put this in quotes, winning. Translation, and I'm not going to quote Charlie Sheen, winning, that's kind of weird. Here it is. Even if you go into a negotiation and you have a clear idea what winning looks like, of what winning looks like, if you tell yourself the only way to, quote, win in this negotiation is to come out with that outcome, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, compromising, listening, paraphrasing, trying to understand where the other person is coming from, and coming out with some of what you thought you needed, giving the other person some of what they needed. Yeah. And could you imagine creating a win-win situation? Mary, if I say great negotiation, last bullet point is a win-win situation, does that mean you won everything you wanted to and needed to win, and I won everything I needed to win? Or is it something else? 30 seconds.
No, it's somewhere in between. And again, it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And the more that you could come out of a negotiation where both parties feel that they are happy with where you are, that to me is what the win-win looks like. In other words, even if you don't get 100% of what you want, sometimes you find that compromise, and that compromise can still be a win.
That does not mean that everyone walks away thrilled, high-fiving, we won, everything's great. Listen, if you walk away from a negotiation and some of you is disappointed because some of the things you wanted or needed you couldn't achieve, I get it. That's why it's called negotiating versus dictating. I'm Steve Adubato, that's Mary Gamba. This has been another Lessons in Leadership video mini seminars. It'll be on our website, Leadership and Negotiation. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragrammatis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.